Penguin Random House Audio presents Make Me, a Jack Reacher novel by Lee Child, read for you by Dick Hill. For Darley Anderson, 20 years my agent, with thanks. Chapter 1. Moving a guy as big as Kiever wasn't easy. It was like trying to wrestle a king-sized mattress off a waterbed, so they buried him close to the house. Which made sense, anyway. The harvest was still a month away, and a disturbance in a field would show up from the air. And they would use the air, for a guy like Kiever. They would use search planes and helicopters, and maybe even drones. They started at midnight, which they thought was safe enough. They were in the middle of 10,000 acres of nothingness, and the only man-made structure their side of any horizon was the railroad track to the east. But midnight was 5 hours after the evening train and 7 hours before the morning train, therefore no prying eyes. Their backhoe had 4 spotlights on a bar above the cab, the same way kids pimped their pickup trucks. And together the 4 beams made a wide pool of halogen brightness. Therefore, visibility was not a problem either. They started the hole in the hog pen, which was a permanent disturbance all by itself. Each hog weighed 200 pounds, and each hog had 4 feet. The dirt was always chewed up. Nothing to see from the air, not even with a thermal camera. The picture would white out instantly from the steaming animals themselves and their steaming piles and pools of waste. Safe enough. Hogs were rooting animals, so they made sure the hole was deep, which was not a problem either. Their backhoe's arm was long, and it bit rhythmically in fluent, articulated 7-foot scoops, the hydraulic rams glinting in the electric light, the engine straining and roaring and pausing, the cab falling and rising as each bucket load was dumped aside. When the hole was done, they backed the machine up and turned it around and used the front bucket to push Kiever into his grave, scraping him, rolling him, covering his body with dirt until finally it fell over the lip and thumped down into the electric shadows. Only one thing went wrong, and it happened right then. The evening train came through 5 hours late. The next morning they heard on the AM station that a broken locomotive had caused a jam 100 miles south, but they didn't know that at the time. All they heard was the mournful whistle at the distant crossing. And then all they could do was turn and stare at the long, lit cars rumbling past in the middle distance, one after the other, like a vision in a dream, seemingly forever. But eventually the train was gone, and the rails sang for a minute more, and then the taillight was swallowed by the midnight darkness, and they turned back to their task. 20 miles north, the train slowed, and slowed, and then eased to a hissing stop, and the doors sucked open, and Jack Reacher stepped down to a concrete ramp in front of a grain elevator as big as an apartment house. To his left were 4 more elevators, all of them bigger than the first, and to his right was an enormous metal shed the size of an airplane hangar. There were vapor lights on poles set at regular intervals, and they cut cones of yellow in the darkness. There was mist in the nighttime air, like a note on a calendar. The end of summer was coming. Fall was on its way. Reacher stood still, and behind him the train moved away without him, straining, grinding, settling to a slow rat-a-tat rhythm, and then accelerating, its building slipstream pulling at his clothes. He was the only passenger who had gotten out, which was not surprising. The place was no kind of a commuter hub. It was all agricultural. What token passenger facilities it had were wedged between the last elevator and the huge shed, and were limited to a compact building which seemed to have both a ticket window and benches for waiting. It was built in a traditional railroad style, and it looked like a child's toy, temporarily set down between two shiny oil drums. But on a signboard running its whole length was written the reason Reacher was there: Mother's Rest, which he had seen on a map, and which he thought was a great name for a railroad stop. He figured the line must cross an ancient wagon train trail right there, where something had happened long ago. Maybe a young pregnant woman went into labor. The jostling could not have helped. Maybe the wagon train stopped for a couple of weeks, or a month. Maybe someone remembered the place years later. A descendant, perhaps, a family legend. Maybe there was a one-room museum. Or perhaps there was a sadder interpretation. Maybe they had buried a woman there, too old to make it, in which case there would be a commemorative stone. Either way, Reacher figured he might as well find out. He had no place to go, and all the time in the world to get there, so detours cost him nothing, which is why he got out of the train. To a sense of disappointment, initially, his expectations had been way off base. He had pictured a couple of dusty houses and a lonely one-horse corral and the one-room museum, maybe run part-time and volunteer by an old guy from one of the houses, or the headstone, maybe marble, behind a square wrought-iron fence. He had not expected the immense agricultural infrastructure. He should have, he supposed. Grain meet the railroad. It had to be loaded somewhere. Billions of bushels and millions of tons each year. He stepped left and looked through a gap between structures. The view was dark, but he could sense a rough semicircle of habitation. Houses, obviously, for the depot workers. He could see lights, which he hoped were a motel, or a diner, or both. He walked to the exit, skirting the pools of vapor light purely out of habit, but he saw that the last lamp was unavoidable because it was set directly above the exit gate. So he saved himself a further perimeter diversion by walking through the next-to-last pool of light, too, at which point a woman stepped out of the shadows. She came toward him with a distinctive burst of energy, two fast paces, eager, like she was pleased to see him. Her body language was all about relief. Then it wasn't. Then it was all about disappointment. She stopped dead, and she said, "Oh." She was Asian, but not petite. 5'9", maybe, or even 5'10", and built to match, not a bone in sight. No kind of a willowy waif. She was about 40, Reacher guessed, with black hair worn long, jeans and a T-shirt under a short cotton coat. She had lace-up shoes on her feet. He said, "Good evening, ma'am." She was looking past his shoulder. He said, "I'm the only passenger." She looked him in the eye. He said, "No one else got out of the train, so I guess your friend isn't coming."
"My friend?" she said. A neutral kind of accent. Regular American. The kind he heard everywhere. He said, "Why else would a person be here, except to meet the train? No point in coming otherwise. I guess normally there would be nothing to see at midnight." She didn't answer. He said, Don't tell me you've been waiting here since 7 o'clock.
I didn't know the train was late, she said. There's no cell signal here, and no one from the railroad to tell you anything. And I guess the Pony Express is out sick today.
He wasn't in my car, or the next two either.
Who wasn't?
Your friend.
You don't know what he looks like.
He's a big guy, Reacher said. That's why you jumped out when you saw me. You thought I was him. For a second, anyway. And there were no big guys in my car. Or the next two.
When is the next train?
7 in the morning. She said,
Who are you, and why have you come here?
I'm just a guy passing through.
The train passed through, not you. You got out.
You know anything about this place?
Not a thing.
Have you seen a museum or a gravestone?
Why are you here?
Who's asking? She paused a beat and said,
Nobody.
Reacher said, Is there a motel in town?
I'm staying there.
How is it?
It's a motel.
Works for me, Reacher said. Does it have vacancies?
I'd be amazed if it didn't.
Okay, you can show me the way. Don't wait here all night. I'll be up by first light. I'll knock on your door as I leave. Hopefully your friend will be here in the morning.
The woman said nothing. She just glanced at the silent rails one more time and then turned around and led the way through the exit gate.
Chapter 2 The motel was bigger than Reacher expected. It was a two-story horseshoe, a total of 30 rooms with plenty of parking, but not many slots were occupied. The place was more than half empty. It was plainly built of stuccoed blocks painted beige, with iron stairs and railings painted brown. Nothing special. But it looked clean and well kept. All the light bulbs worked. Not the worst place Reacher had ever seen. The office was the first door on the left, on the ground floor. There was a clerk behind the desk. He was a short old guy with a big belly and what looked like a glass eye. He gave the woman the key for room 214, and she walked out without another word. Reacher asked him for a rate, and the guy said, $60. Reacher said,
A week?
A night. I've been around.
What's that supposed to mean?
I've been in plenty of motels.
So?
I don't see anything here worth $60. 20, maybe.
Can't do 20. Those rooms are expensive.
Which rooms?
Upstairs.
I'm happy with downstairs.
Don't you need to be near her?
Near who?
Your lady friend?
No, Reacher said. I don't need to be near her.
$40 downstairs.
20. You're more than half empty, practically out of business. Better to make $20 than nothing at all.
30.
20.
25.
Deal, Reacher said. He took his roll of cash out of his pocket and separated a 10 and 2 5s and 5 singles. He laid them on the counter, and the one-eyed guy swapped them for a key on a wooden fob marked 106, taken from a drawer with a triumphant flourish.
In the back corner, the guy said, near the stairs.
Which were metal, and which would make a clanging noise when people went up and down. Not the best room in the place. Petty revenge. But Reacher didn't care. He figured his would be the last head to hit the pillow that night. He didn't foresee any other late arrivals. He expected to be undisturbed all the way through the silent plains night. He said,
"Thank you," and walked out, carrying his key. The one-eyed guy waited 30 seconds and then dialed his desk phone, and when it was answered, he said, "She met a guy off the train. It was late. She waited 5 hours for it. She brought the guy here, and he took a room." There was the plastic crackle of a question, and the one-eyed clerk said, "Another big guy. A mean son of a bitch. He busted my balls on the room rate. I gave him 106 in the back corner." Another crackling question and another answer. "Not from here. I'm in the office." Another crackle, but this time a different tone and a different cadence. An instruction, not a question. The one-eyed guy said, "Okay." And he put the phone down and struggled to his feet and stepped out of the office and took the lawn chair from outside 102, which was empty, and dragged it to a spot on the blacktop where he could see his own door and 106's equally. "Can you see his room from there?" had been the question, and "move your ass somewhere you can watch him all night" had been the instruction. And the one-eyed guy always obeyed instructions, if sometimes a little reluctantly, as at that point, as he adjusted his angle and dumped his bulk down on the uncomfortable plastic. Outside, in the nighttime air, not his preferred way of doing things. From inside his room, Reacher heard the lawn chair scrape across the blacktop, but he paid no attention. Just a random nighttime sound. Nothing dangerous. Not a shotgun jacking around. Not the hiss of a blade on a sheath. Nothing for his lizard brain to worry about. And the only non-lizard possibilities were a lace-up footstep on the sidewalk outside and a knock on the door, because the woman from the railroad seemed like a person with a lot of questions and also some kind of expectation they should be answered. "Who are you, and why have you come here?" But it was a scrape, not a footstep or a knock, so Reacher paid no attention. He folded his pants and laid them flat under the mattress, and then he showered away the grime of the day and climbed under the bed covers. He set the alarm in his head for 6 o'clock in the morning, stretched once, yawned once, and fell asleep. The dawn came up entirely gold, with no hint of pink or purple. The sky was a rinsed blue, like an old shirt washed 1,000 times. Reacher showered again and dressed and stepped out to the new day. He saw the lawn chair, empty, oddly placed in the traffic lane, but he thought nothing of it. He went up the metal stairs as quietly as he could, reducing the likely clang to a duller, pulsing boom, by placing his feet very carefully. He found 214 and knocked on its door, firmly but discreetly, like he imagined a bellboy would in a fine hotel. "Your wake-up call, ma'am?" She had about 40 minutes, 10 to get going, 10 to shower, 10 to stroll up to the railroad again. She would be there well ahead of the morning train. Reacher crept back down the stairs and headed out to the street, which was wide enough at that point to qualify as a plaza. For farm trucks, he guessed, slow and clumsy, turning and maneuvering, lining up ahead of the weighbridges and the receiving offices and the grain elevators themselves. There were train tracks embedded in the blacktop. It was a whole big operation, some kind of a hub facility, presumably, serving the locality, which in that part of America could have meant a 200-mile radius, which explained the large motel. Farmers would come in from far and wide and spend the night before or after a train ride to some distant city. Maybe they would all come at once at certain times of the year, when futures were for sale, maybe, in faraway Chicago, hence the 30 bedrooms. The wide street, or the plaza, or whatever it was, ran basically south to north, with the railroad track and the shiny infrastructure defining the eastern limit on the right, and what amounted to a kind of main street defining the western limit on the left. The motel was there, and a diner, and a general store. Behind those establishments, the town spread out in a loose westward semicircle. Low density. Sprawl. Country style. 1,000 people. Maybe less. Richard headed north on the wide street, looking for the wagon train trail. He figured it would come in across his path, from east to west, which had been the whole point of wagon trains. Go west, young man. Exciting times. He saw a crossing 50 yards ahead, after the last of the elevators, a road, perpendicular exactly east to west. On the right it was bright with the morning sun, and on the left it was long with shadows. The crossing had no barriers, just red lights. Reacher stood on the tracks and gazed back south, the way he had come. There were no other crossings for at least a mile, which was about as far as he could see in the pale light. There were no other crossings for at least a mile to the north, either, which meant that if Mother's Rest laid claim to its own east-west thoroughfare, he was standing on it. It was reasonably wide and slightly humped, built up with dirt taken from shallow ditches dug either side. It was covered with thick blacktop, grayed with age, split here and there by weather and random like frozen lava on the edges. It was dead straight, from one horizon to the other. A possibility. Wagon trains went dead straight when they could. Why wouldn't they? No one put in extra miles just for the fun of it. The lead driver would steer by a distant landmark, and the others would follow. And a year later, some new party would find the ruts, and a year after that, someone would make a mark on a map. And 100 years later, some state highway department would come by with trucks full of asphalt. There was nothing to see in the east. No one-room museum, no marble headstone, just the road, between infinite fields of nearly ripe wheat. But in the other direction, west of the tracks, the road ran through the town, more or less dead center, built up on both sides for about 6 low-rise blocks. The corner lot on the right had expanded northward about 100 yards, like a football field. It was a farm equipment dealership. Weird tractors and huge machines, all brand new and shiny. On the left was a veterinary supply business in a small building that must have started out as an ordinary residential dwelling. Reacher made the turn and walked on the old trail, due west through the town, the morning sun faintly warm on his back. In the motel office, the one-eyed clerk dialed the phone, and when it was answered, he said, "She went back to the railroad again. Now she's meeting the morning train, too. How many guys are these people sending?" He was answered by a long plastic crackle. Not a question, but not an instruction either. Softer in tone. Encouragement, maybe. Or reassurance. The one-eyed guy said, "Okay, sure," and hung up. Reacher walked 6 blocks down and 6 blocks back, and he saw plenty of stuff. He saw houses still lived in and houses converted to offices for seed merchants and fertilizer dealers and a large animal veterinarian. He saw a one-room law office. He saw a gas station 1 block north, and a pool hall, and a store selling beer and ice, and another selling nothing but rubber boots and rubber aprons. He saw a laundromat and a tire bay and a place for stick-on boot soles. He didn't see a museum or a monument, which might be okay. They wouldn't have put either thing right on the shoulder, back a block or two, probably, for a sense of reverence and to stay out of harm's way. He stepped off the wagon train trail into a side street. The town was laid out on a grid, even though it had grown up semicircular. Some lots were more desirable than others, as if the giant elevators had a gravitational system all their own. The furthest reaches were undeveloped. Closer to the apex, buildings were shoulder to shoulder. The block behind the trail had one-room apartments that might have started out as barns or garages, and what looked like pop-up market stalls for folks who had given over an acre or two to fruits and vegetables. There was a store that did Western Union and MoneyGram, and faxing and photocopying and FedEx and UPS and DHL. There was a CPA's office next to it, but it looked abandoned. No museum and no monument. He quartered the blocks, one after another, past low shacks, past diesel engine repair, past vacant lots full of weeds as fine as hair. He came out at the far end of the wide street. He had covered half the town. No museum and no monument. He saw the morning train pull in. It looked hot and bothered and impatient about stopping. It was impossible to see whether anyone got out. Too much infrastructure in the way. He was hungry. He walked straight ahead through the plaza, almost all the way back to where he had started, past the general store and into the diner. At which point, the motel keeper's 12-year-old grandson ducked into the general store, to the payphone on the wall just inside the door. He dumped his coins and dialed a number, and when it was answered, he said,
"He's searching the town. I followed him everywhere. He's looking all over. He's doing it, block by block."
Chapter 3. The diner was clean and pleasant and attractively decorated, but it was above all else a working place, designed to swap calories for money as fast as possible. Reacher took a two-top in the far right-hand corner, and he sat with his back to the angle, so he had the whole room in front of him. About half the tables were taken, mostly by people who seemed to be fueling up ahead of a long day of physical labor. A waitress came by, busy but professionally patient, and Reacher ordered his default breakfast, which was pancakes, eggs, and bacon, but most of all coffee, first and always. The waitress told them the establishment had a bottomless cup policy. Reacher welcomed that news. He was on his second mug when the woman from the railroad came in, alone. She stood for a second, as if unsure, and then she looked all around and saw him and headed straight for him. She slid into the empty chair opposite. Up close and in the daylight, she looked better than the night before. Dark, lively eyes, and some kind of purpose and intelligence in her face, but some kind of worry, too. She said,
"Thanks for the knock on the door."
Reacher said, "My pleasure." She said,
"My friend wasn't on the morning train either."
He said, "Why tell me?"
"You know something."
"Do I?"
"Why else get off the train?"
"Maybe I live here."
"You don't."
"Maybe I'm a farmer."
"You're not."
"I could be."
"I don't think so."
"Why not?"
"You weren't carrying a bag when you got out of the train. That's about the polar opposite of being rooted to the same patch of land for generations."
Reacher paused a beat and said, "Who exactly are you?"
"Doesn't matter who I am. What matters is who you are.
I'm just a guy passing through.
I'm going to need more than that.
And I'm going to need to know who's asking.
The woman didn't reply. The waitress came by with his plate, pancakes, eggs, and bacon. There was syrup on the table. The waitress refilled his coffee. Reacher picked up his silverware. The woman from the railroad put a business card on the table. She pushed it across the sticky wood. It had a government seal on it, blue and gold. Federal Bureau of Investigation, Special Agent Michelle Chang. Reacher said, "That's you?"
"Yes,"
she said.
"I'm pleased to meet you."
"Likewise," she said. "I hope."
"Why is the FBI asking me questions?"
"Retired," she said.
"Who is?"
"I am. I am no longer an FBI agent. The card is old. I took some with me when I left."
"Is that allowed?"
"Probably not."
"Yet you showed it to me."
"To get your attention. And for credibility. I'm a private investigator now, but not the sort that takes pictures in hotels. I need you to understand that."
"Why?"
"I need to know why you came here."
"You're wasting time. Whatever else your problem is, I'm just a coincidence."
"I need to know if you're here to work. We could be on the same side. We could both be wasting time."
"I'm not here to work, and I'm on nobody's side. I'm just a passerby."
"You sure?"
100%.
"Why would I believe you?"
"I don't care if you believe me."
"Look at it from my point of view,"
Reacher said. "What were you before you joined the Bureau?" Chang said,
"I was a police officer in Connecticut, a patrol cop."
"That's good, because I was a military cop, as it happens. So we're brother officers, in a way. Take my word as a gentleman, I'm a coincidence."
"What kind of military cop?"
Reacher said,
"The army kind."
"What did you do for them?"
"Mostly what they told me to. Some of everything, criminal investigation usually, fraud, theft, homicide, and treason. All the things folks do, if you let them."
"What's your name?"
"Jack Reacher, terminal at Major, late of the 110th MP. I lost my job, too." Chang nodded once, slowly, and seemed to relax, but not completely. She said, but softer,
"You sure you're not working here?"
Reacher said, "Completely."
"What do you do now?"
"Nothing."
"What does that mean?"
"What it says. I travel. I move around. I see things. I go where I want."
"All the time?"
"It works for me."
"Where do you live?"
"Nowhere. In the world. Right here, today."
"You have no home."
"No point. I'd never be there."
"Have you been to Mother's Rest before?"
"Never."
"So why now, if you're not working?"
"I was passing by. It was a whim, because of the name."
Chang paused a beat, and then she smiled, suddenly and a little wistfully.
"I know," she said. "I can see the movie in my head. The end shot is a big close-up of a leaning-over cross in the ground, two boards nailed together, with an inscription done by a hot poker from a campfire, and behind it the wagon train clanks away and grows tiny in the distance. Then the credits roll."
"You think an old woman's eyed here?"
"That's how I took it."
"Interesting," Reacher said.
"How did you take it?"
"I wasn't sure. I thought maybe a younger woman stopped to have a baby.
maybe rested up a month and moved on. Maybe the kid became a senator or something.
Interesting,
Chang said. Reacher pierced a yolk and took a dripping forkful of breakfast. 30 feet away, the counterman dialed the wall phone and said,
She came back alone from the train station and headed straight for last night's guy, and now they're deep in conversation, plotting and scheming. You mark my words.
Chapter 4 The diner got less busy. The breakfast rush was clearly a crack of dawn thing. Farming as bad as the military. The waitress came by and Chang ordered coffee and a Danish, and Reacher finished his breakfast. He said,
So, how does a private investigator like you spend her time, if you don't get to take photographs in hotels?
Chang said, We aim to offer a range of specialized services, corporate research, and a lot of online security now, of course, but personal security, too. Close personal protection. The rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and that's good news for the bodyguard business. And we do building security, plus advice and background checks and threat assessments, and some general investigations, too.
What brings you here?
We have an ongoing operation in the area.
Against what?
I'm not at liberty to say.
How big of an operation?
We have one man in place. At least, I thought we did. I was sent as backup.
When?
I arrived yesterday. I'm based in Seattle now. I flew as far as I could and rented a car. It was a hell of a drive. These roads go on forever.
And your guy wasn't here?
No,
Chang said.
He wasn't.
You think he left temporarily and is coming back by train?
I hope that's all it is.
What else could it be? This isn't the Wild West anymore.
I know, he's probably fine. He's based out of Oklahoma City. It's entirely possible he had to run back for some other business. He'd have used the train because of the roads. Therefore, he'll come back by train. He'll have to. He told me he doesn't have a car here.
Have you tried calling him?
She nodded. I found a landline in the general store, but there's no answer at his home and his cell is off.
Or out of range, in which case he isn't in Oklahoma City.
Would he have gone further afield, around here, without a car?
You tell me, Reacher said. It's your case, not mine.
Chang didn't answer. The waitress came back, and Reacher got a jump on lunch by ordering a slice of peach pie, with more coffee. The waitress looked resigned. Her boss's bottomless cup policy was taking a beating. Chang said,
He was due to brief me.
Reacher said,
Who was? The guy that isn't here?
Obviously.
Brief you as in update
you? More than that.
So how much don't you know?
His name is Kiever. He works out of our Oklahoma City office, but we're all in the same network. I can see what he's doing. He's got a couple of big things going on, but nothing out here. Nothing on his computer, anyway.
How did you get the backup assignment?
I was available. He called me personally.
From here?
Definitely. He told me exactly how to get here. He referred to it as his current location.
Did it feel like a routine request?
Pretty much. It observed the protocols.
So, procedure was followed, except the case isn't on his computer?
Correct.
Which means what?
It must be a small thing. Maybe a favor for a friend or something else too close to pro bono to get past the boss.
No money in it, either way. So it stays under the radar. But then I suppose it got to be a bigger thing. Big enough to justify the call for backup.
So it's a small thing that's gotten bigger. Involving what?
I have no idea. Kiever was going to brief me.
No idea at all.
What part don't you understand? He was working on a hobby case, privately, in secret, and he was going to tell me all about it when I got here.
What was his tone on the phone?
He was relaxed, mostly. I don't think he likes this place much.
Did he say so?
More my impression. When he was explaining how to get here, he made it sound apologetic, like he was sucking me into some sinister and creepy place.
Reacher said nothing.
Chang said, I guess you military people are too data-driven to follow that line of thinking.
Reacher said, No, I was about to agree. I didn't like the store with the rubber aprons, for instance, and I had some weird kid following me everywhere I went this morning. Maybe 10 or 12. A boy. A slow kid, I assumed, fascinated by a stranger, but very shy. He ducked behind a wall every time I glanced his way.
I don't know if that's weird or sad.
You have absolutely no information at all.
I'm waiting for Kiever to brief me.
Which means waiting for the trains.
Twice a day.
How long before you give up?
Well, that's very blunt.
I was kidding. This is like most bad things that ever happened to me. And to you, too, probably in your patrol car. This is a communications breakdown. A message hasn't gotten through. That's my guess. Because there's no cell service, presumably. People can't cope without it anymore.
Chang said, I'm going to give it 24 hours.
I'll be gone, Reacher said. I guess I'll take the evening train.
Reacher left Chang in the diner and walked back to the old trail, ready to look at the rest of the town. He didn't see the weird kid again. He turned in at the veterinary supply office and rechecked the left-hand side of the street, all 6 blocks, and saw nothing of interest. He continued onward, out into open country, 100 yards, 200, just in case the railroad had dragged the center of town eastward, leaving relics behind in their original locations. If Chang was right, and an old lady had died, her stone wouldn't necessarily be visible from a distance. It might be a low-built affair, a slab laid on the ground, an iron picket not more than 1.5 feet high, all nested in a sea of wheat, with maybe a mown path leading to it from the shoulder. But he saw no such path, and no stone, and no ceremonial iron fence. No larger structure either, no museum, no official billboard about a site of historic interest. He turned around and walked back and started quartering the southern quadrant, block by block, beginning on the east-west side street that ran behind the establishments directly on the trail, which looked pretty much like its northern equivalent, but with more one-room places carved out of barns and garages and fewer fruit stands. But no memorial stone and no museum. Not where logic dictated. Mother's Rest had not always been a crossroads, not until the railroad. It had been a random speck alongside endless straight ruts through the prairie. The stone, or the legend, had brought the town to it. The town had grown up around it, like a pearl around a grain of sand.
But he couldn't find it.
Not the stone or the museum. Not where they should be, which was a respectable distance from the original shoulder, enough to create a feeling of excursion or pilgrimage, which would be about
a modern-day block behind the original shoulder. But there was nothing there. He moved on, block by block, the same way he had before. He saw the same kind of things and began to understand them. The town explained itself to him, gradually, street by street. It was a trading post for a vast and dispersed agricultural community. It shipped in all kinds of technical things and shipped out produce in immense quantities. Grain, mostly. But there was some pasture, too, evidently. Hence the supply companies and the large animal veterinarian and the rubber aprons, he supposed. Some folks were doing well and buying shiny new tractors, and some folks weren't doing well, so they were getting their diesel engines repaired and sticking new soles on their boots. Just a town, like any other. It was the end of summer, and the day had stayed golden, and the sun was warm but not hot, so he kept on strolling, happy to be out of doors, until he found he had revisited every block he had been to and seen everything again. No memorial stone and no museum. No weird kid. But there was a guy who looked at him oddly. Chapter 5. It was two blocks off the old trail on a parallel east-west side street, which had five developed blocks on one side and four on the other. The semicircular shape was starting to bite. There was a bank office and a credit union. There were small lock-up workshops, all of them one-man businesses, with a blade sharpener and a gearbox repairman, and even a barber with a lit-up pole. But in particular, there was a spare parts guy for several different brands of irrigation systems. He had a cramped store, and he was penned in behind the register. Not a small guy. He was facing out, and as Reacher passed by, he got some kind of flicker in his eye, and he reached upward and backward for something behind his shoulder. Reacher didn't see what it was. His momentum had carried him onward. The front part of his brain didn't think much of it, but the back part nagged. Why did the guy react? Easy. He saw a new face, a stranger. Did not compute. What was he reaching for? A weapon? Probably not. A random passerby was no immediate threat, and no one kept a baseball bat or an old 45 loud and proud on the wall. Not in plain sight. Under the counter worked better. Plus, how dangerous was the irrigation business anyway? Bats and guns were for bars and bodegas, and maybe pharmacies. So what was the guy reaching for? The phone, most likely. An old-fashioned, wall-mounted telephone. Shoulder height to most folks, for comfortable dialing. The guy grabbed at it backward because he was too cramped to turn all the way around. Why would he make a call? Was seeing a stranger such an extraordinary event it required instant sharing? Maybe he suddenly remembered something. Maybe he was due a sales call. Maybe he was supposed to send a package. Or maybe he had been told to call in sightings. Of what? Strangers. Told by who? Maybe the weird kid, too. Maybe that was an attempt at actual surveillance. There's a fine line between showy shyness and sheer incompetence. Reacher stood in the plaza and turned a full circle. No one there. At that point, he figured a cup of coffee would be a good idea, so he walked back to the diner. Chang was still in there, at the same table. Late morning. She had swapped seats, so her back was to the angle, where his had been. He threaded his way through the room and sat down at the table next to hers, side by side, so his back was to the wall, too.
habit, mostly. Nice morning? He asked.
She said, feels like a Sunday from my freshman year in college. No cell phone and nothing to do.
Doesn't your guy at least check in with his office? She started to say something, but stopped. She looked all around the room and at the people in it as if counting the number of potential witnesses to what might turn out to be an embarrassing admission. Then she smiled a complex and expressive smile, part bold, part rueful, maybe even a little conspiratorial, and she said,
I might have glamorized our situation slightly.
Reacher said, in what way?
Our Oklahoma City office is Kiever's spare bedroom, like our Seattle office is my spare bedroom. Our website says we have offices everywhere, which is true. Everywhere there's an out-of-work ex-FBI agent with a spare bedroom and bills to pay. We're not a multi-layered organization. In other words, we have no support staff. Kiever has no one to check in with.
But he has big things going on.
Chang nodded. We're the real deal, and we do good work. But we're a business. Low overhead is the key to everything. And a good website. No one knows exactly what you are.
What kind of a thing would he take on as a hobby case?
I've been thinking about that, obviously. Nothing corporate. There's no such thing as a small corporate case. Some of them are like a license to print money. They go straight on the computer, believe me. It's like giving yourself a gold star. This one has to be a private client, paying in cash or handwriting checks. Nothing shady, necessarily, but probably dull and possibly nuts.
Except now, Kiever needs backup.
Like I said, it started small and then it got bigger.
Or the nuts part suddenly wasn't nuts anymore.
Or got even crazier.
The waitress came by and started Reacher's second bottomless cup of the day. He prepaid up front, about four times the check. He liked coffee, and he liked waitresses. Chang said,
How was your morning?
He said, I couldn't find the old woman's grave or any kind of information about the baby.
You think either one would still be around?
I'm pretty sure. There's plenty of space. They're not going to pave over someone's grave. And there's always room for a historical plaque. You see them all over. Some kind of cast metal, painted brown. I don't know who makes them. Department of the Interior, maybe? But there isn't one.
Have you talked to the locals?
Next on the list.
You should start with the waitress.
She has a professional obligation to give me the show business answer, so the good word can get around, and then suddenly her diner is a tourist attraction.
Hasn't worked so far.
You think many people ask?
Probably about 5 out of 10, she said. Except that's about 11 years worth of visitors, right there. So it's a high-percentage, low-frequency proposition. Depends what you mean by many.
And right then, the waitress set off toward them with the bun flask for Reacher's first refill of the session, and Chang asked her,
Why is this town called Mother's Rest?
The waitress stood back, favoring one hip over the other, like tired women do, with the coffee mid-air and level with her waist. She had hair the color of the wheat outside and a red face, and she could have been 35 or 50, and a thin person bulking up with age or a heavy person burning down with work. It was impossible to tell. She looked very happy to take a minute, because Reacher was already her best friend forever, because of the tip, and because she had just been asked a question that was neither offensive nor boring. She said,
I like to think a grateful son in a faraway city built his mama a little country home to retire to, in exchange for all the good things she had done for him. And then some stores came to sell her what she needed, and some more houses, and pretty soon it was a town.
Reacher said, "Is that the official version?" The waitress said,
"Honey, I don't know. I'm from Mississippi. I can't imagine how I'm washed up here. You should ask the counterman. I think he was born in the state, at least."
And then she bustled away, like waitresses do. Chang asked,
"Was that the show business answer?"
Reacher nodded and said, "But from the creative side, not the marketing side. She needs to get with the program, or go right for the movies. I saw one, just like that, on the television set in a motel room in the daytime."
"Should we ask the counterman?"
Reacher glanced over. The guy was busy. He said, "First, I'm going to find some real people. I saw some candidates while I was out walking. Then I'm going to find a place to take a nap. Or maybe I'll get my hair cut. Maybe I'll see you at the railroad stop at 7 o'clock. Your guy Kiever will be getting out, and I'll be climbing aboard."
"Even if you don't know the story of the name yet?"
"It's not that important. Not really worth sticking around for. I'll believe my own version, or yours, depending on my mood." Chang said nothing in reply to that, so Reacher drained his mug and slid out from behind his table and threaded his way back through the room. He stepped outside. The sun was still warm. Next on the list, real people. Starting with the spare parts guy for the irrigation systems. Chapter 6. The guy was still hemmed in behind his register. He had about 2 feet of room, which wasn't enough. He was close to Reacher's own height and weight, but slack and swollen, in a shirt as big as a circus tent, above a belt buckled improbably low under a belly the size of a kettle drum. His face was pale, and his hair was colorless. There was a phone on the wall behind his right shoulder. Not an ancient item with a rotary dial and a curly wire, but a regular, modern, cordless telephone with a base station screwed to the stud and a handset upright in a cradle. Easy enough for the guy to flail blindly behind him, and then the numbers were right there in the palm of his hand for speedy dialing. Or speed dialing. The base station had a plastic window with 10 spaces. 5 were labeled, and 5 were not. The labels seemed to be the brands the guy sold parts for. Helplines for technical advice, possibly. Or sales and service numbers. The guy said,
"Can I get you anything?"
Reacher said, "Have we met?"
"I'm pretty sure not. I'm pretty certain I'd remember.
Yet when I walked by the first time, you jumped so high you practically bumped your head on the ceiling. Why was that?"
"I recognize you from your old pictures."
"What old pictures?"
"From Penn State in 86.
I wasn't smart enough for Penn State.
You're in the football program. You were the linebacker everyone was talking about. You were in all the sports papers. I used to follow that stuff pretty closely back then. Still do, as a matter of fact. You look older now, of course, if you don't mind me saying that."
"Did you make a phone call?"
"When?"
"When you saw me walk by."
"Why would I do that?"
"I saw your hand move toward the phone."
"Maybe it was ringing. It rings all the damn time. Folks wanting this, folks wanting that."
Reacher nodded. Would he have heard the phone ring? Possibly not. The door had been closed, and the phone was all electronic, with adjustable volume,
and maybe it was set to ring very quietly in such a small space, especially if calls came in all the time. Right next to the guy's ear, a loud ring could get annoying. Reacher said, "What's your theory about this town's name?" The guy said,
"My what?"
"Why is this place called Mother's Rest?"
"Sir, I honestly have no idea. There are weird names all over the country. It's not just us."
"I'm not accusing you of anything. I'm interested in the history."
"I never heard any."
Reacher nodded again. He said, "Have a very pleasant day."
"You too, sir. And congratulations on the rehab, if you don't mind me saying that."
Reacher squeezed out of the store and stood for a moment in the sun. Reacher visited with 12 more merchants for a total of 13, which gave him 14 opinions, including the waitresses. There was no consensus. 8 of the opinions were really no opinions at all, but merely shrugs and blank looks, along with a measure of shared defensiveness. "There are weird names all over the country. Why single out Mother's Rest in a nation with towns called Why and Why Not, and Accident and Peculiar and Santa Claus and No Name and Boring and Cheese Quake and Truth or Consequences and Monkey's Eyebrow and Okay and Ordinary and Pie Town and Toad Suck and Sweet Lips?" The other 6 opinions were variations on the waitress's fantasy, and his own, Reacher supposed, and Chang's. Folks were working backward from the name and inventing picturesque scenarios to fit. There was no hard evidence. No one knew of a memorial stone or a museum or a historical plaque or even an old folk tale. Reacher strolled back down the wide street thinking, nap or haircut? The spare parts guy was the first to call it in. He said he was sure he had handled it safely with the old football trick. It was a technique he had been taught many years before. Pick a good college team in a good year, and most guys were too flattered to be suspicious. Within an hour, 3 more merchants had made the same kind of report, except about the football. But in terms of substance, the picture was clear. The one-eyed motel clerk took all the incoming calls, and he got the information straight in his mind, and then he dialed an outgoing number, and when it was answered, he said, "They're coming at it through the name. The big guy is all over town, asking questions." He got a long plastic crackle in exchange, calm, mellifluous, and reassuring. He said, "Okay, sure," but he didn't sound sure. And then he hung up the phone. The barber shop was a 2-chair establishment with 1 guy working in it. He was old, but not visibly shaking, so Reacher got a hot towel shave and then a clipper cut, short on the back and sides, fading longer up top. His hair was still the same color it had always been. A little thinner, but it was still there. The old guy's labors produced a good result. Reacher looked in the mirror and saw himself looking back, all clean and crisp and squared away. The bill was $11, which he thought was reasonable. Then he strolled back across the wide plaza, and outside the motel he saw the lawn chair he had seen before, all alone in the traffic lane, white plastic. He picked it up and put it down again on the right side of the curb, on a patch of grass near a fence, unobtrusive, in no one's way. He rotated it with his foot until it was lined up with the rays of the sun. Then he sat down and leaned back and closed his eyes. He soaked up the warmth, and at some point he fell asleep, outdoors in the summertime, which was the second best way he knew. Chapter 7.
That evening, Reacher walked up to the railroad a whole hour early, at 6 o'clock, partly because the sun had gone low in the sky and there was nowhere left to bask, and partly because he liked being early. He liked enough time to scope things out, even something as simple as getting on a train. The elevators were still and silent, presumably empty and awaiting the harvest. The giant warehouse was all closed up. The rails were quiet. The vapor lights were already on, ahead of the dusk, which was coming. The western sky was still gold, but the rest of it was dark. Not long, Reacher thought, before nightfall. The tiny railroad building was open but empty. Reacher stepped inside. The interior was all wood, in a gingerbread style, and it had been painted many times, in an institutional shade of cream. It smelled like wooden buildings always did, at sundown after a long, hot day, all airless and dusty and baked. The ticket window was arched, but it was small overall, and therefore intimate. It had a round hole in the glass for talking, but behind the glass the shade was down. The shade was brown and pleated. It was made from some kind of primitive vinyl. It had the word "closed" printed on it in paint that looked like gold leaf. There were restrooms off a short corridor. There was a table with a 6-day-old newspaper. There were lights hanging from the ceiling. Milky bulbs in glass bowls, but there was no switch. Near the door, where it should have been, was a blank plate with a message taped to it. Ask at ticket window for lights. The benches were magnificent. They could have been 100 years old. They were made from solid mahogany, upright and severe, only grudgingly sculpted to the human form, and polished to a shine by use. Reacher picked his spot and sat down. The contour felt better than it should. The shape was stern and Puritan, but it was very comfortable. The woodworker had done a fine, subtle job. Or maybe the wood itself had given up the struggle and instead of fighting back had yielded and molded and learned to embrace. From all the shapes and sizes, with their various masses and temperatures, literally steamed and pressed, like an industrial process, in super slow motion. Was that possible, with wood as hard as mahogany? Reacher didn't know. He sat still. Outside it went darker, and therefore inside it went darker too. Ask at ticket window for lights. Reacher sat in the gloom and watched out the window. He guessed Chang was out there, somewhere, in the shadows. That was how she had done it before. He guessed he could go find her. But for what? He wasn't planning any kind of a big, long speech. 5 more minutes of small talk wouldn't make a difference. He traveled. He moved on. People came and went. He was used to it. No big deal. A friendly wave would do the job as he stepped across to the train, by which time she might be preoccupied anyway, talking to Kiever, getting the story, finding out where the hell he had been. If Kiever was on the train. He waited. A long minute before the train was due, Reacher heard the stones in the rail bed click and whisper. Then the rails themselves started to sing, a low, steely murmur, building to a louder keening. He felt pressure in the air and saw the headlight beam. The noise came next, hissing and clattering and humming. Then the train arrived, hot and brutal, but infinitely slow, brakes grinding, and it stopped with the locomotive already out of sight. And the passenger cars lined up with the ramp. The doors sucked open. On his left, Reacher saw Chang step out of the shadow, like a reflex because of the train,
out and back like the flash of a camera. A man stepped down from the train. On his right, Reacher saw the spare parts guy from the irrigation store. He stepped out of his shadow and took one step forward and waited. The man from the train stepped into a pool of light. Not a big guy. Not Chang's guy. Not Kiever. This was a person a little above average height, but some way below average weight. He could have been 50, and what might have been called slender in his youth was starting to look emaciated. His hair was dark, but probably colored, and he was wearing a suit and a collared shirt with no tie. He had a bag in his hand, brown leather, larger than a doctor bag, smaller than a duffel. No one else got out of the train. The doors were still open. On his right, Reacher saw the spare parts guy take another step forward. The man from the train spotted him. The spare parts guy said a name and stuck out his hand. Polite, respectful, welcoming, and humble. The man from the train shook hands. The doors were still open. But Reacher stayed where he was, in the dark. The spare parts guy carried the leather bag and led the man in the suit toward the exit gate. The train doors sucked shut, and the cars whined and shuddered, and the train moved away again, slowly, slowly, car after car. The spare parts guy led the man in the suit out of sight. Reacher stepped out to the ramp and watched the taillight dance away in the distance. From the shadows, Chang said,
"They're heading for the motel."
Reacher said, "Who are?"
"The man from the train and his new pal."
She stepped into the light. She said,
"You didn't go."
He said, "No, I didn't."
"I thought you would."
"So did I."
"I think I'm a nice person, but I know I'm not the reason."
Reacher said nothing. Chang said,
"That came out wrong. I'm sorry. Not that kind of reason, which is presumptuous anyway. I mean, no reason I should be that kind of reason." "Now I'm making it worse. I mean, you didn't stay just to help me out. Did you?
Did you see those guys shake hands?"
"Of course.
That's why I stayed."